This is a Lip Media podcast.
This podcast is recorded on the lands of the Woolgaroo-Coobah, Bindal and Wurundjeri peoples. The country we now call Australia was built on the stolen lands of hundreds of unique Indigenous nations, and we recognise that as white women, we continue to partake in and benefit from the act of colonisation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Hi friends, just a content warning on this one. This episode includes some references to rape.
Books love.
Yay, we're back for the year!
Woo! 2021!
So, welcome back to Book Slut with Abby and Sam. It's Valentine's Day-ish. So we're tackling the big... I was going to say the big V, but that's...
I mean, that's really... It's very visceral, that idea. Tackling it. We're spearheading the big V.
There's nowhere to hide. So we've had some discussions around this year and things that we want to do this year. And I think one of the big things is that last year was a lot for us.
It was so much for everyone.
Well, yeah.
But also for us.
Yeah, for everyone, but mostly for us as the main characters in the movie about our lives.
Yes. So as a little bit of housekeeping, little update for everyone, we've decided that we're going to, moving forward, do the show in seasons, in 6-episode seasons. And the rationale behind that is essentially that we want to take breaks because we're human beings and we need breaks and rest. So that's the way we're going forward.
It's weird how much researching erotica really takes it out of you. So for this week, thematical because of the time of year, we're talking about Valentine's Day, and I feel like it's important that we start with an upfront acknowledgement of our feelings about Valentine's Day.
Do you want to go first?
No, you can go. I feel like I always go first.
The vulnerability. I mean, I feel like it's not going to be a surprise to anybody listening. Although, like, considering we host a podcast about romantic literature, maybe it is surprising. I think Valentine's Day is rubbish, personally. Thanks to everyone who responded to our... We did a little Instagram quiz and a lot of you responded. And a lot of people, as it turns out, do celebrate Valentine's Day and do really like it. I don't really get that. I think it's... I mean, you know, all the classic criticisms of it being, like, super capitalist and a bit cheesy, I think.
We are so fun to date, just FYI.
But, yeah, I don't know. But also, like, if you want to celebrate it, celebrate it. I'm also not going to be, like, aggressively anti-Valentine's Day either.
Yeah, I think it's, like, I don't mind the idea of doing something cute for people, if you have people in your life on Valentine's Day. It's kind of like, yeah, I think it should be every day, but, you know, whatever. If you need the reminder of a day, so be it. But I would rather stick a fork into my eyeball than, like, go out to a restaurant bar.
No.
On Valentine's Day.
Fuck no.
Maybe that comes from working in hospitality. Definitely. And specifically, shout out to Mrs. Palmer's, who do a Palmer for two on Valentine's Day every year.
Name a less romantic meal.
Name a less romantic fucking restaurant.
Oh.
But it was always packed. Always packed. It was one of our busiest nights.
God. Like, I mean, I used to work in, like, a semi fine dining French restaurant, and Valentine's Day was the worst night of the year. I hated it.
And everyone's like, oh, I want to do something special for my partner, so put a fucking sparkler on their cake or some shit. And I'm like, everybody is putting a sparkler on each other's cakes.
Yeah, they're all like, we would line them up in the restaurant in, like, rows, in a row of two, and they'd get all, because it was a set menu, everyone get exactly the same meals at exactly the same time,
and you're like, that's upsetting.
Lemmings.
Sheep.
I have been thinking about it a bit though, like in the lead up to this episode, thinking about this idea of like romance and if I was just being a killjoy because I'm like, ugh, Valentine's Day. And like, I don't know. I don't know if you share this, if this is something that maybe you can relate to, but I definitely used to really reject this idea of romance. Like, I think it came alongside this sort of rejection of femininity as well, that it, when I was younger, definitely played into, you know, thinking about things like, you know, I just get along better with boys. And
oh,
like,
exactly. I was going to say, it goes into that like, oh, I'm a tomboy. Yeah. Like, I'm one of the cool girls. You don't need to spoil me with flowers and chocolates because, like, I'm just super chill. And it's like, no, bitch, bring me chocolates. Bring me flowers. I think I as well have a particular, like, relationship with Valentine's Day because I have been voluntarily and involuntarily single for most Valentine's of my life. Involuntarily when I was younger and a bit more voluntarily now. And one of the things that used to really annoy me is that if you're a single person and you don't like Valentine's Day, you're automatically put as this like bitter crone who would totally be into it if she had a boyfriend, which I think is not something that gets thrown at men if they don't like Valentine's Day.
Absolutely. Spot on.
So so that was always one of the issues for me. And then when I've dated people during Valentine's Day, I've also had this like, I mean, it's not really pressure because I don't really like Valentine's Day, but there is this thing of like, I can't enjoy it because I've told so many people that I don't really like it.
You've trapped yourself. I think also, like, as I've gotten older, my opinion and understanding of what is and isn't romantic has changed as well. Mm. So that, like, initial rejection of romance was very, very tied to, like, yeah, those sort of cliched, like, a teddy bear holding a heart, bullshit kind of stuff. And so now I think that I'm getting a bit older. It's like, oh, actually, no, I do like romance. I just don't want the bullshit. You know?
Yeah. Like, I will never turn down somebody offering to cook me a meal.
Oh, swoon. Especially if it's got cheese in it.
I mean, it must have cheese. Otherwise, it's not a meal. What are you talking about, Sam?
That's true.
So, I guess just before we jump into the book, I would like to know a little bit more about Valentine's Day. And the history.
Sure.
I assume it's a saint, right?
Yes. Yes. So I read a bit about this. I didn't go too deep because
it's boring.
It's so boring. And again, if you listen to our Christmas episode, you'll know we're not a history podcast. So
we're very bad at history.
Essentially, it's hard to pinpoint the exact origin of the holiday, but they do generally point back to Rome, to ancient Rome. There used to be this celebration called Lupercalia. Don't know if I've pronounced.
I mean, but you've pronounced incredibly well, so.
So this celebration would go on from February 13th to 15th, and unsurprisingly, super gendered. Men would sacrifice a goat and a dog. I mean,
you know what? That's what romance is missing in the modern day.
And then they would whip the women with the hides of the animals.
I really wish you had a lead with that before I put my big old opinion out there.
Young women would line up in particular because it was believed to make them more fertile. Apparently, they would also do this like matchmaking thing where young men would draw the names of women out of a jar and then they would be paired for the entirety of that celebration. I imagine there was probably a lot of like debaucherous sex and also all kinds of awful things happening at the time.
When in Rome, right?
Yeah. So it's also tied to these two different men called Valentine, which is kind of where we get to this whole saint thing. They were executed on February 14th, and their martyrdom was honored by the Catholic Church. And then, as the Catholic Church likes to do, it kind of encroached on the pagan holiday, and they amalgamated, and now we have Valentine's Day.
Do you have anything else?
No, that's they're the only good bits that I could find.
Sick one. So, it may surprise you to know that this is the book that caught my eye, but the book is called Fuck Valentine's Day.
Oh.
But I, like, again, kind of like with, what was the other holiday we did? Christmas. Yeah. With Christmas. I was looking for, like, I don't know, somebody having sex with, like, a sentient box of chocolate or, you know, something like that. But everything I found was just kind of like, not even, some of them weren't even on Valentine's Day. It was just kind of like hot stories for Valentine's Day, you know? So it was actually quite difficult to find things. Anyway, this book is Fuck Valentine's Day from C.M. Stunick, written in 2013, but she is described as international best-selling author.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm gonna sum up the book for you. And then we'll go through it properly.
Okay.
But essentially, it's the story of a very horny 22-year-old virgin with legs for days, in her own monologue words.
Okay.
And she's alone in the week leading up to Valentine's Day, and she's sad about it. And then suddenly, the bad boy of her college starts flirting with her. So does, like, a hot nerd. And she also gets this, like, secret admirer. All in the week leading up to Valentine's Day. And so...
Okay.
It's about this. That's the story.
Okay. I'm sensing a lot of tropes coming our way.
Oh, honey. So, before you read the book... But in the first page of the book, it says, "Warning, this book contains handcuffs, hair pulling, perverted Valentine's cards, and all other sorts of naughty. This book is not intended, not is capitalized, for anyone who dislikes hot sex scenes, bad boys, or nerds with kinky sides. Read at your own risk." If I was going to write up a warning for this book, it would be very different to that.
Ooh, what would it say if you were writing the warning?
Poor consent.
Oh no.
Again, another, like, woman whose inner monologue makes it sound like she may need to, like, seek professional help. Like, she has horny Andy, rational Andy, and regular Andy, who often have conversations with each other in her head that she then replies to, sometimes out loud.
This seems to be a real running theme.
Yeah. What is this? Why do we have to have... Why can't you just establish that someone has some sort of inner turmoil without needing to personify their inner monologue in this, like, angel devil...
Yeah, I think it's a really lazy writing tool.
Yeah, and it's bad. It is always bad.
It's like you're trying to establish that people are complicated and nuanced in a really oversimplistic way.
Yeah, but anyway, so chapter one.
Oh, wait, is this how we're doing this?
Yes, because it's quite hard to keep track of what's happening. So okay. I separated it into chapters.
Strap in, everyone.
Chapter one, and I will read you the first line of chapter one. "I'm not going to touch your dick just because you gave me a box of chocolates."
I mean...
Valid.
Fair.
So yeah. Valid.
It's not a trade.
At this point, I was like, all right, I'm okay with this. Essentially, the hot bad boy of college, Quinn. I mean, it's not a very bad boy name, but I don't hate the name. What I don't feel good about Quinn is that this book was written in 2013 and he seems to have stepped out of, like, the emo wet dreams of early 2000s. He has a red mohawk.
Oh, no. What a bad boy. Stop it, and, Quinn.
And neck tats. And he has, at one point they mention, he has, like, you know those chains that people had on their jeans?
Oh, bless. Maybe it just took her, like, 10 years to write it.
It's just like...
This is her masterpiece, Abby.
Who is this man and why does everybody want to have sex with him? The chains are enough. Anyway, he gives her chocolates. This is how the book starts, just kind of out of the blue.
Wait, Quinn gives her chocolates and she's like, I'm not going to suck your dick.
Yes. She's okay. She's very...
She's really asserting.
She's very rude. That's another problem I have with this book, but we'll discuss that later.
A lot of the protagonists that you end up reading are very rude.
Okay, so we'll discuss it now. I had an...
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I had an epiphany. I have to find where I wrote down my epiphany.
This is exciting. Season 2, epiphany.
So here's my epiphany. I feel like in erotica, a lot of people write the female protagonist as, like, this modern woman who loves sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become, like, another trope, right? So it's, like, yeah, kind of unfettered woman. And I feel like they maybe think they're being feminist by doing it. But what I'm realizing the more of this trope I read is that that woman is often just rude, yeah, treats people like shit, and is just, like, obnoxious all of the time.
Yeah, it's almost like this idea of, like, a powerful woman has been conflated with being this, like, ball buster, you know, and you see this in movies and things as well, like the women who are in, like, high roles in companies and things like that are portrayed as being this, like, really cold-hearted, cruel, rude bitches.
Like, it is, it's that swap of, you know, like, To be a boss bitch, you have to essentially act like a man in business, in these, or... And I think this kind of stuff is similarly women writing, like, what they think fuckboys act like.
Yeah.
But it's a woman doing it, and therefore...
It's empowering?
It's enlightening or something. And it's like, well, can't we just enjoy sex and treat people like humans and respect each other?
Yeah.
Like, why is that not the trope of a modern woman who loves sex?
Yeah, and why can't there be elements of femininity and masculinity in those characters? Or why can't she also be powerful? Like, why can't the protagonist also be powerful but still, you know, but not default to that being a masculine kind of power, you know?
Yeah.
It's really tired, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my epiphany reading this book.
Yeah, well, I mean, it explains why you're having these quite strong reactions to a lot of the protagonists in these books. Because it is a running, like, it astounds me. It keeps happening again and again and again.
It seems like your options are very, like, we're still in this Madonna or the whore.
Yeah, totally.
Dichotomy thing. It's like either you're a, you know, blushing bride, kind of, you know, ooh, I'm not gonna say the word for anybody's genitals, or you're like, just fucking put it in me, yeah. Like,
apparently Bogan too. Yeah, there's still definitely a dichotomy happening. It's evolved, but it hasn't, like, really changed.
Yeah, but anyway, so after she's like, I'm not gonna suck your dick, she turns around and she runs into the hot nerd who's called Preston, and
that's a nerd name. I'm into it.
Yeah, Preston. I was really conflicted about Preston, but we'll get to that. So she runs into, like, his firm chest or whatever, and then drops the chocolates. He helps her get them back, and there's a lot of talk about how he's, like, soft spoken and polite and whatever. But anyway, and because Preston is so hot, and this is also a running theme, she literally drools over him.
Oh, no.
She's looking at him and then says, it wasn't until a bit of saliva hit me in the tits that I managed to get a hold of myself.
Hit me in the tits.
It's drool with a bit of velocity.
Oh, that's so good. Okay. No, that's great.
And then later on, she's going to a store that's got a Valentine's Day sale to pick up some, like, discounted sweets, which, respect. And surprisingly, she's clumsy, Sam.
Oh, God, what a klutz.
But she trips and falls face first into a bin of Valentine's Day pins.
Ow. Also, I don't like this, like ball buster, but also still like this fragile, klutzy mess. Like, what?
Yeah, and also like a virgin. And I don't want to be like, you know, virgins have to.
Is she a virgin?
Away. Yeah, she's a virgin.
How many? It's like, are we playing trope bingo in this book?
But she trips over Quinn, the bad boy, and then he's like, oh, I'll, you know, buy you some more chocolates because you dropped all of mine while you were drooling over the hot nerd.
Is she okay? There's a lot, like, pins.
Oh, yeah, no, the pins seem to be fine. She just...
Could have been a very different book.
She just falls face first in them and then, like, gets up and is like, ooh, chocolates. And so he gets her chocolates and then puts a, like, condom under the bow of the chocolates, which I think is just really presumptuous of Quinn. Like, he doesn't even know her name at this point.
Wait, so this is the bad boy.
Bad boy, yeah.
But safe sex, that's good. He's bad, but not too bad.
The first sentence of chapter 2. I woke up an hour late and blew a big test in biology because I spent all night masturbating to Quinn and wearing fuzzy pink handcuffs.
You had me and then you lost me. How is she masturbating while also wearing handcuffs? This is a feat.
I think she handcuffs one arm to the bedpost and masturbates with the other. Also, she's got an 8-inch dildo that she uses called Randy.
I mean, wait, Randy and Andy?
Oh my God, I didn't even pick that up. And Andy having fun.
I think Randy as a name for a dildo is actually quite good.
And she's there having a cereal. She gets a Valentine's card. It has a sexy guy on the front in his underwear and it says, "Bitch, please, you thought Cupid was a freaking baby? Check out this bow and arrow."
Ugh.
Which I don't really get, but I assume he's referring to his penis.
I mean, I hate Valentine's Day cards.
She's looking at this card. She opens it up. A picture falls out. Guess what it is?
Is it a dick pic?
It is a dick pic.
Oh, my God. Who sends physical copies of dick pics? I mean, effort went into that.
2013. Who is doing this?
Where was it printed? Like, did they go to Officeworks?
I was picturing like a Polaroid, but I don't know. That would be my choice.
Oh, that would make more sense. That makes much more sense.
Yeah, so it's a dick pic of a 7-inch pierced circumcised penis, and it just has an address in the card, which she follows.
Bold.
Like, yeah. And I'm just like, girl, safety first. Like, what are you doing? Live stream your fucking location to a friend. What are you doing?
And not in 2013, you would be.
Yeah, I guess. So the address takes her to a boxing gym. She goes in. She's like, I've got no idea who's here. Then she finds a note on her car with a number. She calls the number, goes direct to her message bank. And then
this elaborate ruse?
And then she gets a text saying, check under your seat in calculus tomorrow, right? And I also have this section of a internal monologue discussion. So rational Andy, he was a douche. You're so lucky I protected your cherry berry from that prick.
Oh. Oh.
Horny Andy, I don't have a cherry. I masturbate with an 8-inch rubber cock. rational Andy. I meant your metaphysical cherry, God. In chapter 3, Andy wakes up and Quinn's at her door. She, like, gets up because she's shocked because she's like, who let you in here? I mean, valid. But then as she gets up, she hurts her arm because she has left herself handcuffed to her bed.
How embarrassing.
After masturbating to the dick pic.
I tell you what, I have never, ever
masturbated to a dick pic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's stationary. It's just there.
It's stationary. It's essentially a pen. It's a jizz pen.
No, I mean stationary as in still.
I thought you meant like, a, you know, like, I thought you were being like a quirky take on like, it's just part of the furniture.
Quinn's like, whoa, you're a bit of a kinky lady. And then he just, like, jumps on her and starts kissing her. And, oh. Yeah, and she's, like, trying to say something, but he's, like, kissing her or whatever. No words would come out, just moans as he freed his cock from his pants and proceeded to rub it against my clit through the blanket. Is this dry humping? I wondered. And then, no, this is at least wet humping. Oh, my God, wet humping. Yes.
Oh, my God. I hope it's not a wool blanket. That should be itchy.
Oh, imagine if it was a wool. So she comes, and then he's all like, help a brother out. And she's like, wow, an uncircumcised penis. And also, real jump in our relationship. She, like, shoves him off the bed and then is like, sorry, late for calculus.
I gotta check under my chair.
Under her chair is a box. And a note saying, you know, fine, you found them. Nice job. Inside the box, you'll find one of my favorite Valentine's treats, along with your next clue. The box is, like, lined in pink velvet and has metal handcuffs in it.
I mean, she'd be into that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but it's a bold move from Mystery Man sending, like, these notes. Like, who knows that she's into locking herself up with fluffy handcuffs?
I mean, maybe he's done his homework. He's extra creepy.
Yeah, and he's like, proper jail time creepy. She slams the box shut, and then because people in the auditorium look at her, she just like flips out and then grabs Quinn's hand and runs out of the lecture hall. Wait,
Quinn was in there too?
Oh yeah, Quinn's in all of her classes. He's just always sitting next to her now for some reason.
So he's just got her off rubbing his dick on her clit.
Yep.
And then he's watched her open a box with handcuffs in it from someone else.
So she does note that he's too busy looking at her tits
to see a box presumably on her lap. He's just like, the boobies.
Quinn is not the brightest button, Sam. Okay.
The brightest button. Beautiful. Okay. So she, and just so we're on the same page.
She grabs his hand, runs out of the lecture hall, and then he, like, presses her against the wall and starts, like, making out with her. And she's like, oh, no, sorry, that isn't the reason that I grabbed your hand. And then Preston walks out, and he's all like, you dropped these, and it's a pair of lacy underwear that was also in this box.
Okay, Preston's definitely got a creepy side, for sure.
And then she is drooling again.
Oh,
Quinn has, like, run away for some reason that you don't really understand. And then Preston makes out with her outside of the lecture.
Oh, she's having a busy couple of days.
Yeah. And then in her head she's like, wow, 22 years of nothing and suddenly, like, three men are into me. And her rational mind says, you're exuding whore pheromones.
Oh.
Put on some damn Chanel or some shit. Cover up that crap.
What? Rational Andy. Slut-shaming Andy.
I know.
Also, wait. So, Quinn, Preston, is the third person the mystery person?
Yeah. The mystery man leaving the notes.
I totally just assumed that was Preston, but okay.
So, the next clue says there'll be a clue on the notice board after her lit class. I think we've all had enough by this point.
You want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This book.
Chapter 4.
So much suspense. I want to know who this third mystery person is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm making it more suspenseful than it was in the book because it was really obvious in the book super early on.
Oh, okay.
But chapter 4, they're in class again. Quinn sits down next to her, starts jacking off in class next to her without so much as a buy your leave, you know.
I feel for the other students in the lecturer so much.
He looks at her when she's like, are you jacking off? He looks at her and goes, thought this might help you get in the mood.
Ugh.
When has something like that ever helped you get in the mood, Sam?
God. I mean, the audacity of it.
I know. And like, I don't mind a little bit of like public...
But I think the subtlety is part of the eroticism of it, you know?
Oh, and also, you know, let's chat about the fact that I'm into that before you just whip your dick out in class. But then he's like, oh, touch yourself. And she's like, it's the middle of class, dude. And then they have this like strange conversation where he's like jerking off and she goes, did you bring lube?
What?
I whispered as the wet, slick sound from next door increased in volume. Yeah. I don't like to whack it dry. It decreases sensitivity.
Oh, imagine sitting like behind them or in front of them and just hearing that like sloppy that, like, lube. Oh no. It's like you're just trying to take notes. I tell you what, I might cut this out, but it just reminds me so much of one of my first boyfriends. I once got dumped in the middle of a movie and it was because I refused to give this guy a hand job in the middle of the cinema. And like, not even 10 minutes after I said no, and this is like year 7, so I would have been like 13. not even like 10 minutes after I said no, he was like, oh, I don't think this is working out. And then I sat through the rest of the film. Like a fucking idiot.
Can I just say, the audacity.
Right? And I'm harsh on myself, but like, poor, I look back on past Sam, like young Sam. I'm like, oh, you poor thing. I wish you had felt like you could leave.
Yeah, absolutely. She doesn't leave either. She says, okay, but can you keep your grunts of pleasure down to a minimum, please? I whispered, wondering where all of that, you know, that stuff was going to go.
That stuff.
That stuff.
Oh, God.
And then he just reaches over and touches her, like, just touches her. Mm. And she, like, moans. And then freaks out and runs out of class again. She does a lot of running out of class. Quinn follows her. And then she gives him
I hope he put his dick away first. He just like, just draws out and is like flapping between his legs. Quinn sending the notes because he's a bad boy and the dick's got a piercing?
Just hold up, son.
Okay, sorry.
She gives him a blowjob.
What? How did we get here?
And it's just like outside in the corridors of the university. Like, just they ran outside of the class and then he's like, but what about like a blowjob? And she was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And then she says, you know, oh, this is out of character for me. I blamed the upcoming holiday and all of its pushy, lovey crap. Couples everywhere were amping up their PDAs, buying each other kitschy shit, and just generally being assholes to the rest of us that would like to have a sex partner.
Oh, okay. So we are also playing into this, like, anti-romance, anti-Valentine's thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just before he comes, he says, you've got it. And I just found that so funny. Like, can you imagine giving someone a blowjob and they're like,
and now you've got it.
And do-si-do. But anyway, so she's given him a blowjob out the front of this classroom where the board is, which is where the next clue is. Mm. It's another naked dude saying, happy fucking Valentine's Day, bitch. Which is just really rude.
Quite aggressive, sure.
Has his address on it. She decides, instead of calling any friends, to call Preston and be like, oh, my friend is sick and I need to go and visit him in these apartments.
Mm-hmm.
Can you come with me?
Okay.
And I was like, what's your end game here? Because, like, if you get there and the mystery guy's hot and you want to fuck him, like, do you just say, oh, Preston, sorry?
Yeah.
Gets to the apartment and Preston's like, oh, I actually know that guy really well. That's E's apartment. Nobody answers the door. Preston's like, I live next door. Do you want to come in for a cup
convenient.
Of tea?
Convenient. The plot thickens.
She walks in for the cup of tea and he has a sex swing. And she's like, I don't know how I feel about this. Tries to leave and he's like, oh, and then trips and lands kind of presenting herself on the lounge.
Of course. I'm a klutz, but I'm a sexy klutz.
And then he starts making out with her and she's stuttering around and he just says, shut up, Andy.
Whoa.
The safety...
Red flag.
The safety word is kitten, but I don't think you'll need it. She doesn't even know what a safety word is. And he has to... he barely explains. He's like, oh, just, you know, something if you want me to stop, but you're not going to need it. Keeps going. And she says, I can't do this. I'm a virgin. And tries to stand up. And he's all like, so what? Like, aren't you ready for this?
Oh, my God. Oh, this is awful.
And then she's like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, whatever. And then he just, like, fucking dives in there.
No.
And it says, sweet fucking Jesus was the first thing I said when Preston grabbed my hips. Cock slick with lube. I did like the usage of lube. Just
yeah,
as
a lot
side
of lube,
note.
Yeah.
And thrust all the way into me.
Ugh.
He didn't test the waters or ease himself in. He just entered me in one fell swoop.
Sorry, is that supposed to be, like, arousing because it's like he's bold and just plunged? Like, that sounds awful.
Yeah, exactly. Then, of course, there's a mirror. So he's like, watch me fuck you. Watch me take your virginity.
Jesus.
And then he pulls out and she just goes bananas, like screaming at him, like, you bitch, like, get back inside of me. What the fuck?
What? Okay, because you started then and I was like, yeah, fair enough if she's upset.
No, she's upset that he's pulled out.
Oh, I'm on a roller coaster.
And then he puts her in the sex swing, goes for it again. And then he starts calling her kitty cat. Which I think entirely negates your safe word of kitten.
Absolutely.
If you're going to call one of them, like, a cat-related nickname.
Kitty cat. Kitty cat.
So, like, your safe word can't be essentially also your nickname for someone. That's fucked up, dude.
Yeah, that's really not okay. Wow, that was a really terrible sexual debut, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, she... frothed it. So.
Okay.
Last chapter. And fucking strap yourself in for this, Sam.
Ooh.
She wakes up the next day. There's a note saying, I'm at the gym. E's there with me. Why don't you come along? She goes over. He's boxing with this, like, older dude. And she's like, oh my God, this can't be E. Like, what the fuck? This guy is, like, 50 years old. He gets out of the boxing ring. It was Preston. All along.
Okay, so I was right the first time.
Yeah.
Also, wouldn't she have seen when she was having sex with him that he has a piercing
on
his...
She does address this. She didn't really look at his dick, apparently.
I mean, I guess she didn't have a lot of time.
No,
before
it was
he
just
plunged
like,
in.
It was just like straight in there.
Jeez. Okay.
And then she's like, oh, hey, you know, you sent me a picture of your dick. Which I think is a fair thing to say to someone. And he was like, oh, I thought you'd like it. She says it was creepy. And he says, you've been staring at me for years, eye raping me every chance you get.
Whoa. Let's not be throwing around rape. given what just happened.
Yeah. And then they fuck in the gym. She's making too much noise. So he's like, if you're going to keep making noise, we're going to have to do a different activity with your mouth. She gives him a blowjob. She also has this inner monologue bit that says, I had a sudden and irrational fear that I was going to turn into Anastasia Steele and start spouting off things about my inner goddess and referring to my fucking cunt as down there.
Oh, that's a bit rich coming from... Was that rational Andy saying that, or is that horny Andy saying that?
And are you still concerned about that stuff, Andy? Fuck you. Like...
Is that a little hat tip, like, between erotica authors? Like, what is that?
I feel like it's, like, a dig. But I'm also like, you also suck. So I'm not really sure.
You're in the worst possible club.
Dig up.
Okay, so what happened to Quinn then?
So when she's giving him a blowjob, he says, ever since I watched you go down on Quinn, all I can think about is
watched
your mouth.
It.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Whoa. Yeah, I missed that part. He watched it. She didn't know that he was watching.
God.
But he watched it.
It's just like one big red flag. The whole thing is a red flag.
Yeah, and then he's like, I like to watch. And then they kind of pick up where they left off with the blowjob. And then he essentially, like, deep throats her and says, you know, I had to reach up and grasp his shaft before he bruised my throat.
Oh.
And then during the time that he's, you know, thrusting into her face, he says, tell me I'm better than Quinn.
That's so pathetic. What a loser. Oh my God.
Next day, she's in class. Quinn's talking to her and he's like, I went past your place a couple of times on the weekend. Like, where were you? And she was like, oh, maybe I should feel guilty about, you know, giving Quinn a blowjob and then essentially not talking to him for the weekend. But I'm a modern woman and I'm fucking enjoying this. So, like, don't harsh my mellow, kind of. Preston sees her talking to Quinn and then says to her, you're going to fuck him.
Oh, I thought we were done. This keeps going.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay.
You have to have experiences before you can make decisions, which is so patronizing.
Also, if she's incapable of making decisions, then what just happened, Preston?
And then he says, you're going to fuck him and I'm going to watch. And she invites Quinn to her place, handcuffs him to her bed, doesn't tell him that Preston is looking through her door.
Oh God.
Gives him a hand job and she, like, goes a bit dom on him. So there's a bit of a switch thing going on with her, which, you know, was okay if you ignore the rest of the book. And and is like, the safety word is kitten. And then Preston barges in and is like, no, kitten, you know, I thought I was okay with you, like, being penetrated by him, but I don't think I can share. Suck his dick while I penetrate you from behind.
What?
And then
I don't think I can share. So let's share.
Yeah, you know, hierarchy of sexual acts.
Oh, cringe.
And then Quinn's like, what the fuck? Like, this person's just burst in here. But then she's like, oh, but you're still hard, so you're into it. Starts
not how it works. That's not. That's not worth it. No.
Starts blowing him and is getting penetrated by Preston. And then at the end, Quinn's like, so, you know, what are you guys up to next Saturday? And then this is the end. This is the finale. It's Valentine's Day. We've made it. The week has passed.
It's been a long week for Andy. All of the Andes.
She's probably very sore. Preston's all like, I have something special planned. She's all like, ugh, I hate Valentine's Day. Quote, I despised it with every bit of soul until I walked into the apartment and found the world's cheesiest Valentine's Day setup. Happy fucking Valentine's Day, Preston said. Then he looked down at me with the slightest sparkle of affection in his eyes. It was just a glimmer, but it was there, and that was all I needed to see. How fucking low is that bar, Andy?
God, just a glimmer. Just a little love nugget keeps me satisfied.
So essentially, it's the story of a woman coming to love Valentine's Day when she has a man.
I hate this. Wow. You know what also upsets me about this is, like, it's got the ingredients of what could have been a very, like, fun, erotic tale. Like, bit of cuckolding, bit of switch, bit of, like, you know, exhibitionism. Like, all of these things are potentially really hot. And yeah, it's just all, again, all the stuff around it that completely fucked it up.
Yeah. And it I know we say this every time, but I really don't think it takes that much to include a conversation about what you're into.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, just, oh.
Yeah.
That was my story. Thank you for listening.
That was a roller coaster. So, I guess something that I think maybe we should grapple with in this episode is just a small question about whether or not love is a scam. Yeah. So essentially, I listened to this episode of Hidden Brain, and it was all about marriage and long-term relationships. And they talk a bit about in it about the history of marriage. And as I assume a lot of people know, you know, back in the day, way back when, marriage was solely for economic and political means. It wasn't about love. And so at that point, it was actually much more equal. So, like, if you were a baker, you would marry another baker because it would be like, well, there's two of us, twice the amount of work, like, we can share the load. You know, if you're a farmer, you would look for someone with similar, like, work ethic or similar skills. So in a sense, it was kind of a bit more equal in that it was about being able to share your resources, essentially. Mm. And so then with the introduction of a love match and how when that became more popular, the narrative started to shift towards more of this, like, opposites attract thing. Like, you suddenly weren't looking for someone to share your resources with you. You were looking for someone who, like, gave you that something that you didn't have. And so that's when started to get distinct gender roles, started to have more of a division of labor according to sex, and love marriage became looking for, like, that other part of yourself that you're missing, you know, like, you're something that will make you whole. And I just that combined with the fact that, like, structurally, statistically speaking, women are so much worse off in marriages, be it, like, health outcomes, financial outcomes, life expectancy. Like, women have so much a worse time in marriages. I just, like, these things combined together, I was like, oh my God. And then arguably Valentine's Day is all about constructing this idea of romantic love, and if we follow the sort of, like, trail that has been laid down, that leads into things like long-term relationships and marriage. And it's just like, I'm not convinced it's not a scam, Abby. That's where I'm at.
I mean, I don't know if I can answer your question, Sam.
Just a small one.
But I think a lot of that, I mean, a lot of that makes sense to me. I also think it was a weird thing that I think about quite a bit. I often wonder about how much the amount of resources affects people's marriages. Resources of humans, mostly. If you have a smaller pool of acquaintances, and this is one of the things I think about with Tinder a lot, of, like, how it affects people's relationships, because now with things like Tinder, online dating, your pool of people you can meet is so broad that sometimes I think people don't want to really look at their close relationships because they're like, well, I, you know, there are other people out there, and I'm definitely guilty of that.
So is what you're saying that a smaller pool is more conducive to a to sticking with something longer term, because you're not essentially looking around and being like, oh, there are so many other options?
I feel like it, right? I also feel like a small sense. I also feel like a smaller pool is more conducive to like even having that like creating that relationship, because I feel like humans naturally want to be with other people, like whether that's, you know, friendship, relationships, whatever, but we're told that the relationship is like the be all and end all. And if you're only seeing the same people, at some point you're going to start looking at some of those people and be like,
yeah, I mean, totally. There's a reason that people end up having affairs at work and things like that. You're around them all the time. Mm. So, yeah, absolutely. On that note of, like, the relationship hierarchy stuff, you know, that we are taught to sort of prioritize romantic commitments above all else, I think that's another thing that really shits me about Valentine's Day. And that's just, like, preoccupation with romantic, a very narrow view of what romantic love is. I also hate that it's like really, it's super gendered in the sense that it's highly marketed towards women as though like this is what you need to aspire to, you know, you should be aspiring for romantic love.
Yeah, but it's also marketed towards men as like this is what you need to get your partner, like, yeah, a what, he didn't get you something for Valentine's Day? Like, you know, men are supposed to go all out for this one day for some reason, because society tells them that they should. And, you know, so there's quite a lot of pressure on men to create, like, have this big date. And then that also builds into the fact that it's, like, assumed that men aren't making the effort most of the other days.
Yeah, and totally. I think it also ties into this idea that women are the ones that are highly emotional and highly romantic and really want a relationship. And so if you're a man, like, you have to do this thing to like keep your woman happy, like really problematic kind of cliches playing out, which then I think come up in different points in relationships where, like, I mean, we've both certainly had the experience of when you try to communicate with someone and you're like, no, actually I don't want this, or I don't like this. And then
they're so worried about you getting upset with them because you didn't do the thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I said that I didn't, I'm not really into it. So I'm not mad if you don't do it. I'll be more mad if you do, because I'll be like, but I told you that I'm not into this.
Yeah. What makes you think that ignoring me and going, like, because society told you to? Like, where have you been? Listen back to the previous episodes.
Have you met me? That's gotta be it. From now on, whenever I start dating someone, I'll be like, and here are 50 episodes of all of my opinions on everything to do with what our relationship is going to be.
Oh my goodness. Do you think that would make it? Do you think it would make it better or worse, dating someone who had listened to all of this?
I have no idea.
Anyway, I guess my whole point is that I think, yeah, like we should be having a more expansive like idea of what love and romance and relationships are, but I think Valentine's Day and Galentine's Day are bullshit and not the way to do it.
It is. I mean, it's one of those things where it's nice to be reminded to look out for each other and to express your feelings towards people. Like that, I think the intention behind Valentine's Day is really lovely, but the pressure that
comes
along with it.
Look at you bringing the balance.
But the pressure that comes with it, the kind of all of the stuff around it just becomes, you know, so much.
I do love, though.
People should be expressing their love all of the time. Aww. And if it's going to be particularly on Valentine's Day, that's fine. I don't understand why you want to stand in line. and be in a really busy restaurant with other people, but I am not other people, and that's what makes the world beautiful.
Aw, that's nice. That's nice.
Books, love.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.